This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Out during this drive so that you can explore more opportunities that KBOO has to offer. Shifts are generally available between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. between now and April 6th. If you have questions or you want to schedule, call Ani at 503-231-8032, extension 213, or email volunteer at kboo.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on our hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, an environmental activist fighting for the removal of an old-growth sequoia in Portland's Pier Park appears in court.
The Oregon Senate votes to give undocumented immigrant college students access to in-state tuition prices.
And India passes a sweeping bill toughening penalties for crimes against women.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, March 21st, 2013. KBOO is currently in our spring membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by calling 877-500-5266. I'm Jen Chavez.
And I'm Robert Barncord. A woman who was arrested a month ago for attempting to prevent the removal of a sequoia tree from Portland's Pier Park appeared in court yesterday. Also yesterday, another community activist delivered a statement at Portland's City Council meeting asking the city to reconsider their plans for building a bike path through Pier Park. The removal of the tree has many questions, many questioning both the decision and the notification process for Portland Parks and Recreation. KBOO's Rebecca Ney has more on the story.
On Wednesday, February 20th, a handful of activists gathered around a giant sequoia tree in Pier Park. It was a last resort effort to save the tree from being removed in order to proceed with construction of the North Portland Greenway Trail. The group prevented the city from removing the tree for 2 days, but the effort was short-lived. One activist, Christine Fountain, was arrested that Friday for crossing the police tape around the giant tree, which was eventually cut down by the end of the day. Earlier today, I spoke with Christine, who explained why she decided to cross the tape.
I was on the phone until the very last second with the mayor's office, when the mayor gave me the final, or the mayor's office gave me the final no, the tree's coming down, I had to make a decision, which I'd been thinking about for a day and a half or more, and I decided that I was going to make one last-ditch effort because I felt that it was very, very important to bring as much attention to this whole affair while there was the media there.
Fountain was charged with trespassing and resisting arrest. Yesterday, she appeared in court to answer those charges.
Apparently, when something like this happens and you have no prior arrest, they will drop the severity of the charges down to a misdemeanor. Resisting arrest is a felony, apparently a low-level felony, but apparently they dropped that down to a misdemeanor, and then they decided that they weren't going to file charges against me at all.
While Christine Fountain's legal problems may be behind her, the issue of the sequoia removal and the future of the grove at Pier Park is one of concern.
The concern now that the tree is gone is that the 65-foot asphalt trail that they are planning to build into the grove will dead-end at the grove because, according to Parks, there is no money to either design or build the remainder of that trail. So that will make people, after the bridge is built and this dead-end 65-foot path goes into the grove, there will be people riding bikes and walking and hiking and jogging down across the bridge and directly into the grove, into an unprotected area where all the roots will be exposed. And we're very, very concerned that heavy foot and tire traffic in that area is going to be extremely detrimental to the trees.
Another activist involved in the effort to stop construction at Pier Park is Dennis Kepis, who appeared in front of City Council yesterday with these requests.
We're advocating to save the giant sequoia grove, and the two issues are advocating for the health of the grove, and we feel like the bridge that's being built is adverse to the health of the grove. And then the other issue is we had lack of notice for us to get on the topic. Truly, we've only been on the topic 5 or 6 weeks since it was posted to be felled.
Elizabeth Kennedy Wong from Portland Parks and Recreation counters that plans for this trail have been in the works for years, but the money has not been available to implement these plans until recently.
Decisions made 2 years ago get built upon. We don't keep remaking decisions if we want to move projects forward. And things like trails are a real combination of being opportunistic and strategic when you can get funding, when you can get access to land. And that's why we kind of plan for them in the future. So when the opportunities do come up, we can take advantage of them, like this ODOT grant. So, you know, this particular trail has been in the planning for 10 years. You know, if there's new information, if something has changed in the community that would cause us to think differently about something, we're willing to do that. But that's got to be pretty profound.
The Portland Parks and Recreation spokesperson says the Bureau did their due diligence in keeping the process transparent.
So it's really hard to, you know, make sure that everybody's paying attention to everything that you think they should be paying attention to until it gets to the point where it really matters to them. And, you know, I know that we did mailings and we put things in newsletters and we sent out emails and we put signs in the park. And people just didn't equate it to what they cared about in the park, and how you bridge that is perpetually my greatest challenge.
According to Christine Fountain, no plans involving the sequoia tree were discussed at a public meeting on the trail in 2011.
There was a public meeting, an open house that was held in December of 2011. And I was not there, but I know of 5 or 6 people who were there, and to the best of their recollection, they do not remember seeing any drawing that was either indicative that the tree would be taken down or that there was going to be a 60-foot asphalt path or trail, as they call it, that was going to be laid along with the bridge directly into the towards the middle of the grove.
In a letter to the Oregonian on March 14th, a citizens group advocating for the construction of the North Portland Greenway Trail defended the Bureau, stating that they have collaborated with the city and Metro for more than 8 years on this project. They accused the activists involved with the effort to save the tree of manufacturing outrage. Nevertheless, Christine Fountain and Dennis Kepis say they will continue to press the city for alternatives. This is Rebecca Ney with KBOO News.
KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every weekday evening. So now we are asking you to do the same. Joining us now are Zeke and Sam to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Yes, Sam and Zeke are here.
Yes,
we are. I am Sam.
I am Zeke.
And we are here to talk about how you can step up your game to keep KBOO alive, keep it going, keep it vital, keep it strong, and keep it independent. How you do that, the first step is you
go to KBOO.fm or pick up your phone right now and call 877-500-5266.
When?
You got to do it right now. Now is the best time. There is no other time as good as right now.
Wait, who should do that?
You should do it. You, the listener, need to call us in at 877-500-5266.
That's right.
That is 877-500-KBOO. Help lend your support. Help us keep great alternative programming like KBOO's evening news program on the air.
Yeah, we're calling you out to call in. Call 877-500-5266. 500-5266. Join Paul, who has renewed his membership from right here in Portland. Thank you, Paul. We are so glad to see you remaining holding your spot in the KBOO family. Won't you join us right now? Won't you join KBOO? Won't you join Paul in joining with KBOO? Join your pennies, nickels, and dimes. Join your pocket change to agitate for social change right here at the Mighty 90.7 KBOO. KBOO.fm is a website where you can learn more, where you can become a stakeholder.
And 83% of our money at KBOO comes directly from individuals like Paul, directly from individuals just like you, the listener. And we need that support. Those small donations add up very quickly. They're what we need to keep this station running, to keep programs like The Evening News, like Democracy Now!, like all the other excellent programming that you know and love about KBOO on the air.
And speaking of the news, we're going to return to the news and learn some more about what's happening right here in your backyard on your community radio, KBOO.
A bill that would legalize cannabis in Oregon has been scheduled for a hearing in early April. House Bill 3771, introduced late last month by the Oregon House Committee on Revenue, provides for the regulation, the production, and the sale of marijuana and products containing marijuana. The bill would establish a regulatory system similar to the one with which Oregon regulates alcohol. Oregon residents would be permitted to possess up to 6 plants and 24 ounces of marijuana. The Oregon Health Authority would be charged with managing producers and retailers, while the Oregon Liquor Control Commission would oversee taxation. The legalization and production of industrial hemp is also included in this legislation. Hemp production would be regulated by the State Department of Agriculture. The bill is scheduled to appear in front of the House Judiciary Committee on April 2nd at 1 p.m.
Yesterday, KBOO reported that the Oregon State Senate was considering a bill to allow undocumented immigrant college students in Oregon to pay in-state tuition. Today, the bill, which originated in the Oregon House, was approved by the Senate with a 19-11 vote and is now headed to the desk of Governor Kitzhaber. Previously, immigrant college students living in Oregon have been subject to out-of-state or even international student tuition, which is often 3 or 4 times higher than in-state tuition. While still not eligible for financial aid, House Bill 2787 will grant in-state tuition to immigrant students who graduate high school or an equivalent after attending Oregon schools for at least 3 years and residing in the U.S. for at least 5 years. It also requires students to prove that they are actively working towards U.S. citizenship or legal status. Today, I spoke with Reyna Lopez, an Oregon immigrants' rights advocate with the group CAUSA, for more details. Under the bill that was just passed by the Oregon Senate today, what specifically would qualify as intent to seek citizenship or the act of seeking citizenship?
At this point, what we're really asking is for them to sign an affidavit that would say that they're seeking citizenship. But ultimately, a lot of these students can't apply for citizenship because there isn't a comprehensive immigration reform that would allow them to really access the citizenship. If these young people applied for citizenship right now, just went to the Department of Homeland Security and decided that that they wanted to fill out an application, it wouldn't be a safe thing for them to do. They could put themselves at risk for deportation, or they could put themselves at risk to ever even thinking about in the future accessing citizenship.
When is the soonest that Oregon students will begin to benefit from this bill?
This bill will be able to be accessed right away by the students in high school this year, students graduating that are trying to access in-state tuition at their state institutions here in Oregon. We're very excited that the class of 2013 will be able to access tuition equity.
What has been the stance of Oregon's educational institutions on the legislation?
You know, we've had a lot of support from our chancellor, superintendents, from high school teachers, middle school teachers, elementary school teachers, folks that work with ESL students. We've had a lot of support from administrators. If it wasn't for some of those folks and what they brought to the table in our coalitions and at the hearings during testimonies, I really don't know where we'd be right now with tuition equity. So they have been a very important force in driving this bill, actually.
Did the legislation have bipartisan support?
There was definitely bipartisan support. Our chief sponsors were Representative Dembro, who actually represents here in Portland. We also had Representative Huffman, who is from Central Oregon, be a very important ally in this. Representative Johnson, who's a Republican from Hood River, was important in making this happen. We've had some really great support from across the line.
What was the basis of the opposition to this bill, and how would you respond to their main criticisms?
I know that a lot of the conversation with the opposition was, you know, they're really looking for a big federal change in terms of immigration reform, that this is ultimately a federal thing. Unfortunately, we on the local level end up having to deal with it. Our economy suffers, our community suffers.
I've read reports that opponents have threatened a lawsuit. What's the likelihood of a lawsuit being filed?
Similar to what happened in California when the California Dream Act happened, the constitutionality of the actual bill was put into question. That will be happening as well with tuition equity. And so after it gets signed, I'm sure that we're going to be talking about the constitutionality of tuition equity. I think that Oregon will probably follow in the steps of California, our neighbor state, and consider tuition equity constitutional, though.
What does CAUSA consider as future goals pertaining to education for undocumented immigrants working from this point forward?
I think that CAUSA, we look at things on a social determinants of health perspective. I think we are very interested in the rights of immigrants, and we will continue supporting the good work of the Oregon Student Association, the good work of Stand for Children, the good work that our organizational partners have been doing around education. We will also be watching out for any bills that go against our immigrant communities in our schools, similar to we've seen some of those things happen across the country, like in Arizona, Alabama, and Georgia, where administrations have been checking students' immigration status in our public schools. We're going to watch out for those things and make sure they don't happen. But as of now, specific work that goes around education, we will follow the lead of our good partners that are experts.
I've been speaking with Reyna Lopez with Oregon's immigrant rights advocacy group, CAUSA. For KBOO News, this has been Jen Chavez.
You're listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work hard every day to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news. And now it's your turn. Joining us now are Sam and Zeke to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
That's right, Robert. It's as easy as going to kboo.fm or picking up your phone right now and calling 877-500-5266 to give us the support we need to keep delivering this content to you. KBOO's Evening News is personally one of my favorite programs on KBOO because we are able to deliver original content, local content, things that you, the listener, need, things that you, listener, want. And you, the listener, can help support us by going to kboo.fm or picking up your phone right now and calling 877-500-KBOO and helping support this station.
You know, a lot of folks have stepped up to show their support for KBOO. Speaking of local and original, some local folks are Grendel's Coffee House at 729 East Burnside, Cannon's Rib Express at 5410 Northeast 33rd Avenue, and Good Neighbor Pizzeria at 800 Northeast Deakum Street. These are some restaurants that have stepped up. They provided food to feed and sustain the volunteers who are working here in our fundraising pod, our little area here from which we're speaking, keeping them sustained, energized, and ready to take your calls at 877-500-5266. And you tell those volunteers the amount of your radio bill and how you want to pay it, and they can guide you through the various options, amounts, payment plans, however you want to do it. The important part is that you make that call. You take that step. 877-500-5266. 5266. Think of everything for which you rely on KABU every day, every week, every month, year in and year out, since 1968, or whenever you started listening. You need KABU for the only for the things that only KABU can bring, and KABU needs you for the things only you can bring, and that is the dollars that pay the bills that KABU must pay. So it's time for you to choose whether you'll pay your radio bill and call 500-5266. I'm going to give you the full number now, 877-500-5266. Tell those volunteers the amount of your radio bill, how you want to pay it, so they can get that going for you. And you can do your part to keep KABU strong, keep it vital, keep it independent.
You know, Sam, I'm always surprised at the level of support and popularity KABU enjoys in the Portland area. I'm always seeing KABU bumper stickers all over the place. Whenever I tell people I volunteer at KABU, they always tell me how much they love the station, how much they enjoy listening to our evening news and other current affairs programs.
How about some of those folks call right now?
It would be great if they called in right now. We know how much our listeners support KABU. But only one out of every 10 listeners donates in, and we need your support. So go to kboo.fm or pick up your phone right now and call 877-500-5266.
Now, you all have been listening, and you all have been telling Zeke how impressed you are with what KABU does, and we do that with only, what was it, one out of 10?
Only one out of 10
one
listeners contributes.
One out of 10 are actually chipping in. Think of how much better we could be. Think of how much more we could do with 2 out of 10. Dare I hope for 3 out of 10? But that's going to require your participation. And your participation starts with that 877 phone call, 500-5266. There's a lot of stuff we can do for you, but that part is all on you. You must be the one to call 877-500-5266. Alternatively, it must be you that logs on to the website kboo.fm, and it absolutely must be you that clicks on that receptacle that says donate today, that fills in the easy, convenient, safe, and secure web form to make your fully tax deductible 501c3 eligible contribution, how you become a stakeholder. You become a voting member of KABU, and you can help steer the course of KABU over the next 45 years to continue from the 45-year legacy that KABU has carved out since 1968. And you can be a part, but you must make that move. You must call 877-500-5266, and we must return to the news. So now, make the call.
Bills introduced in both the Senate and the House would prevent law enforcement from using GPS technology to track citizens without a warrant. Oregon Senator Ron Wyden and Representative Jeff Chaffetz from Utah originally attempted to pass the Geolocation Privacy and Surveillance Act early last year. The current bill is the second attempt for this piece of legislation. Courts in various jurisdictions have applied existing law inconsistently, and the bill is described as a way to provide legal clarity. A representative for the American Civil Liberty Union's Legislative Council said, quote, "Cell phones are also portable tracking devices, and the law needs to catch up with technology to protect Americans from the indiscriminate use of this type of invasive surveillance."
This evening at 7 p.m., Portland-based organization Food and Water Watch is holding a speakers forum at Clark College in Vancouver, Washington. The subject will be genetically engineered food. The group has been working to pass initiative number 522 to mandate labeling genetically engineered foods in the state of Washington. KABU's Zeke Harrington spoke with Lisa Tope from Food and Water Watch for more on this upcoming event.
Could you tell me a little bit about the event?
We are having a speakers forum this evening. It's called The Prospects for the Future of Food in Washington. Food and Water Watch is currently working in Washington State to pass Initiative 522 to label genetically engineered food in the state. So tonight we are having a speakers forum around that issue. We're going to be having Clark County Commissioner Steve Stewart moderating the event, and also have some really great speakers lined up, including George Crimbrell, who co-authored Prop 37 and in California and Initiative 522. He is a senior attorney with the Center for Food Safety. We also have Rick North, who was the former founder of Campaign for Food Safety with Physicians for Social Responsibility. And then I will also be talking at the event about Food and Water Watch's stance around Initiative 522.
And could you briefly explain to our listeners the importance of this legislation?
So the importance of Initiative 522, we've had genetically engineered food on our shelves for the last 15 years without our knowledge or our consent, yet the FDA doesn't require any labeling in the United States for genetically engineered food. And Food and Water Watch's stance is that everyone has a right to know what's in their food and also a right to know what they're feeding their friends and their family. So we are working to educate the public around this issue because we do know that millions of dollars are going to be spent come September and October in misinformation from really large agribusinesses that are selling GMOs to the stores. And so we're just working to educate the public around genetically engineered food because we really believe everyone has a right to know what's in their food. So that's why we're holding this forum tonight.
I've been speaking with Lisa Trope from Food and Water Watch. Thanks for taking the time out to speak with us.
Thank you.
This is E. Harrington with KBOO News.
You are listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. Congratulations to Michael in Portland, who is the winner of today's historic poster contest. A new poster will be on our website at 7 a.m. for tomorrow's contest. Stay tuned for Tillicum Wawa at 6, sharing Native American music, news, and other info pertinent to the Native American community. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather will be mostly cloudy with a chance of AM showers and a high near 49 degrees. Tomorrow night will remain mostly cloudy with lows dropping to around 36 degrees.
It's 5:30 and time for commentary from Jim Hightower.
Great news, people. As a recent headline puts it, household wealth back at pre-recession levels. Oh, joy, we're all rich again. Or not. The article attributes the gain in household wealth to surging stock prices. But before you start ripping up your floorboards in hopes of finding your household share of this bounty, note that the wealthiest 10% of Americans own 80% of all corporate stocks. They gained wealth, not you. Meanwhile, those financially stretched Americans who are struggling to find a job are literally being toyed with by the corporate powers. Today's massive backlog of unemployed and underemployed workers allows corporations to bring in hordes of top-quality applicants for one job. They force these seekers to return 5, 7, or more times for senseless rounds of interviews. Then, the company whimsically decides not to fill the opening at all. From Google to Starbucks, major corporations have roughly doubled the duration of their interview processes in the last 2 years. The New York Times tells of one fellow who applied for a video editing job. He was run through a gauntlet of 9 interviews and made to undergo psychological and personality exams, plus a math quiz and a spelling test, after which the company simply closed the opening. The job-dangling corporation, on the other hand, can simply force existing employees to shoulder a heavier load while it trifles with applicants. In corporate speak, this runaround is laughingly called looking for the purple squirrel, setting absurd job standards that no one in existence can meet. This is Jim Hightower saying, even a dog knows the difference between being tripped over and kicked. The way workaday Americans are being kicked around today is revolting, both in the sense of being abhorrent and in the sense of inducing a revolt.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
The House of Representatives narrowly passed the Paul Ryan budget today, despite every Democrat and 10 Republicans voting against it. In addition to cutting trillions of dollars in social programs, the plan seeks to approve the Keystone XL pipeline. But environmental activists have been mobilizing this week against the cross-country tar sands pipeline, targeting the companies who are bankrolling the project and are set to profit from its construction. FSRN's Alice Olstein has more.
Holding a paper pipeline reading No Keystone XL, a few dozen protesters marched outside the Canadian Embassy in Washington, which sits just a few blocks from Capitol Hill. Indigenous activist Louise Thundercloud said she hoped to send a message to Canadian and U.S. officials to stop lobbying for a project that would violate the rights and health of First Nations communities.
Indigenous people have long been easily sacrificed. We are the acceptable risk of this country as well as Canada and anywhere else that has been colonized. This pipeline not only violates all of our treaties as Indigenous people, it threatens all of our lives, but on a larger scope, it threatens the very lives of all humanity.
Though actions across the country this week have been targeting the companies investing in the pipeline and the refineries that would receive the tar sands oil, the final decision on the project's permit rests with President Obama and the U.S. State Department. Environmental activist Sarah Massey says she's hopeful the president will reject TransCanada's proposal.
This is not good for our country. A pipeline, a leaky pipeline,